Welcome to Future CEOs, and we're here at LeaderX 2015. Tlubi, what are your thoughts about what we've been experiencing here at this Career Masterclass stand?
Third session, so far so good, great experts, the best of the best, and it just keeps on getting better. I'm interested to hear what our next panel of experts have to say about stress.
Yeah, dealing with stress, how to work through it, how to not kill yourself while you're trying to succeed,
more
right?
More importantly.
Just for all of those who aren't here and you want to know what we're seeing, when I turn around, I see a really lovely crowd. There's a guy recording. Shall we smile?
Woo-hoo!
Yes, we smile. And to my right, there's a great crowd. And we really, I think, are the most popular stand here. We won't do it, right?
What did Tebo say? Gossip is good. Gossip is good.
So, let's rather just go straight into the conversation. Karen, tell everyone who you are, because you've got some great stories to tell, but also accolades.
My name is Karen Plashman, and I'm a physiotherapist. I've been involved in physiotherapy for many years, and I travel with lots of sports teams, and I also lecture, and I'm very involved in ergonomics and treating backs and necks and looking after the general population besides sports people as well.
Thank you. It's great to have you here, and we're looking forward to your insights. Laura, who are you?
My name's Laura Reynolds. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of a company called The Recruit Group.
Okay.
We are currently one of the largest privately owned recruitment agencies in the country, and are just having a jaw. Doing good business.
You have an accolade that you must share. Tell us what award you recently won.
I recently won Top Performing Entrepreneur of the Year at the Rising Star Awards.
We love that.
Thank you. Massive honor. I was up against some really, really strong competitors in the entrepreneur space. It was an honor that couldn't have been done without hard graft, and it's paid off. So happy days.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's an absolute honor.
Nadine, you want to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Nadine Walsh. I'm a director at a health and wellness consulting business called Kaelo. So we look after the health and well-being of corporate South Africa, and I have the absolute privilege of getting to do that every day in my role. And it was inevitable that the symptoms of stress, in terms of what we see in terms of the physiological and the mental symptoms of stress, was going to be something high up on our agenda and our radar. So we look at that very closely, and we have some wonderful proactive, preventative types of solutions to deal with and manage one's stress in one's life.
So that's very quickly, you've got international experience. Just tell us about that very, very quickly.
Okay, very quickly. I spent 7 years of my life overseas, have recognized that a lot of, so worked across Asia, America, Europe, and have recognized that a lot of the stuff we struggle with in South Africa isn't unique to us. So there's a lot of global learning and understanding that I bring to what people are dealing with in corporate environments and the leadership positions and those types.
Sarin? We're almost the roses amongst the thorns, right?
Yeah.
Can we look at it like that?
I think we can.
So you're a managing director, but of what?
Yeah, so I'm the managing director of Accenture Analytics, which is inside our digital practice. And I think the context relating to today's discussion, you know, we're starting to blame a lot of our stress and almost this insane connection with our mobile devices and everything digital. So obviously, I'm on the other side of the fence. I'm the one trying to sell you more digital, make you more digital.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think there's an appreciation from our businesses. How do we also look at both sides of the coin in terms of enhancing what digital offers? The opportunities are really, you know, let's go out there and disrupt industries and disrupt businesses. But at the same time, let's have an equally focused view on taking care of people and actually enhancing their lifestyles.
Straight up, my panel of experts, stress. Apparently there's good stress and there's bad stress that we exist in the 21st, you know, 2015, 21st century. True?
True.
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 Tell us more.
I think people tend to fear stress. They think if things are stressful, that maybe they're failing, maybe there's a perception that business isn't going as well as it should be, or maybe that they're doing something wrong. And what I've learned through my career is that stress can be a catalyst. I often refer to my journey as there have been points in my life where I've looked at myself as a seed. And if you put a seed on a shelf in the light, it's never going to grow. But put a seed in the sand, cover it with soil, and put some water on it and cover it in mud.
A little manure.
That seed will grow. And that's when you grow. You grow through times of stress. You know, and I'm of the firm belief that you can always choose to be buried or planted. And that is that is purely your decision. And you can react accordingly. But it is vital that you manage your stress in a way that is healthy and sustainable.
Okay. From our perspectives, it's really important to see the difference between stress, which can often be that good stress that keeps you goal-orientated and focused and gives you the energy and the drive. So I often say that person you see in the corridors pacing up and down, maybe pacing with the next best innovative idea in their mind. But we have to differentiate between stress and distress or burnout. Because the distress or the burnout is that person who wakes up one morning and is suddenly unable to get out of bed.
Absolutely.
And loses all sense of motivation and is no longer able to cope with everything that is feeling so overwhelming in their lives. So there's that, what we see as stress, but what we often don't see as distress, which would just be taken as a day of absenteeism and the person doesn't come into work, or extended absenteeism. And that's from a physiological, mental well-being perspective, from an organizational productivity perspective. That's really the danger zone. But yes, there's that good stress that helps us grow as well. We have to recognize
that. So I wanted
to
check, is it confession time yet?
It's always confession time.
Bring it.
So, all right. No, so, I mean, my confession is that I'm actually a pretty lazy guy.
Okay.
And if I recall, it was actually quite a few years ago, I think one of my managers said to me that you're far too relaxed to amount to anything. And it's just my disposition or my attitude to how I've taken on stress or dealt with stressful situations. My approach and something I encourage amongst the people I lead and coach and work with is step back and assess this thing first. If you don't understand what you're climbing into, you actually could make it worse. So, aside from the practical advice one gets and understanding of what are the stress drivers, dealing with it in that moment, because you don't know it's coming, right?
Sure.
It just turns up and it's there in front of you. Having at least some sort of system to manage it has worked for me. I'm still lazy, and I guess having that disposition gets you to, forces you to do things a bit smarter rather than harder.
Okay.
But I think the thing about stress is obviously when we're treating patients, everybody is stressed.
Everybody.
And some people handle it better than others. So what is the triggering factor that maybe changes one person from having burnout versus other people coping with the stress? And I think you have to get the balance right. And especially now when you ask patients to relax, they just don't know how to switch off while you're treating them.
Sure.
And if you leave them for 10 minutes on a machine or doing something, they've got their cell phones and they're always hyped up and working on. So you have to get a balance between the stress, and you have to work out what works for you to relieve your stress. And the stress is not going to change, but it's how you cope with the stress. And everybody copes differently. Mm. And that's what you have to identify your coping strategy.
These are all good points. Let's see if we can tie it into Melly. Melly, where are you, Melly? Melly? Oh, here we go. He's asking, how do you differentiate between real stress and self-induced stress? So there's another element there, right? And then just some management tips, perhaps, as
otherwise known as worrying.
Otherwise known as worrying. Okay, nice, yeah.
So I think the first place is one needs to set boundaries, personal boundaries as well. So almost stopping yourself from getting yourself into certain situations. I actually read something the other day, a nice little quote, that the stuff that stressed you out a year ago, you've actually forgotten about today.
Yeah.
You actually can't remember what it was, right?
Sure,
yet at that moment, it was like almost suicide time, right?
Completely.
Yeah. I think it was a girlfriend.
It probably was a girlfriend.
I'm not remembering.
But I think those boundaries are very important. As much as one sets boundaries with colleagues, bosses especially, spouses, partners, children even, those personal boundaries also remind ourselves, this is where I stop and start. There's some me time, even if it's stopping at the coffee shop after work before you go home, just to sort of get some downtime, think about something else, look at a flower, I don't know, whatever grabs you. But the significance of separating personally driven stress and stress from external is where you get this balance of how you manage. We were talking about how Karen was just talking about how you manage and understand your own levels.
I would say that all stress is real stress. Yeah. Whether it's perceived or real, I mean, it's still affecting you in a certain kind of way.
Yeah, from my perspective, in terms of what we've experienced, the most phenomenal mindset change around stress is to kind of own your stress, to recognize whether it's self-induced or whether it's external stresses, It's how you prioritize and how you're going to manage it. It's kind of like life. You know, we can wait for life to happen or we can walk boldly into life. I believe the same is true for stress. You can let stress happen to you or you can walk boldly into the face of stress and say, I'm going to take control of my own life across, and for me, it's across your life areas. So I recently walked into a CEO's office, one of our clients, CEO of a large South African telecoms, and he said to me, Nadine, how do I manage work-life balance in my organization and make it not about less time at work for more time at play? Because that's not really the message I want to be giving in terms of driving business business drive. And for me, the thing is about recognizing that, and this is a talk I give, it's about there's no such thing as work-life balance. We need to understand that.
Yeah.
Work is part of life. And we all need to own our work role, and we have roles in our work-life area. We need to own our work role as part of our life. And then own the other parts of our life as well and set our priorities.
So I remember when I happened to be in hospital and you had free rein in the Cliff Central studio.
Oh, dear. It must have been stressful.
I was sweating bullets. Forget about why I was there. And you had someone come on and she used a word when we were talking about this work-life balance. Do you remember the word? I'll remind you.
Remind me.
It was harmony.
Yes.
Instead of looking at it as something you have to try and balance, like a scale or whatever it is, see it as part of a harmony that you're playing in your life. Different notes are there for different reasons and to create different feelings and.
So that and it's harmony across your life areas. Mm. So if I look at my roles that I perform in my life, across all my different life areas, we've got kind of 7 major ones. You know, there's your work role. So I'm a director, I'm a shareholder, I'm a boss, I'm a colleague, I'm a mentor, I'm a facilitator, I'm a speaker. We perform those roles. Then I'm also in my family role, a wife and a mother and a sister and a daughter and, God forbid, a daughter-in-law and all of these roles. All of those roles require my time. And I have all these balls in the air. The important thing is prioritization. Across what's important so that I don't find myself in a situation where I'm spending too much time on those things that are less important to me or not getting to spend enough time on those things that are vitally important to me in my life.
So I think when you talk about harmony, the problem sometimes comes in is when your orchestra is out of sync and different instruments are playing at different levels and the tune is not a harmonious tune. So you have to learn to either tune up your own instrument or, as the conductor, tune up the whole orchestra. So, again, it's your strategy that will help you find your way.
What are the symptoms that you're seeing a lot in, you know, today's society? What are people complaining about when it comes to the physical capabilities and physical illnesses?
Well, as a physiotherapist, we see lots of back pain, neck pain, headaches, and it can translate to anything. There's a high risk of cardiovascular disease, the level of diabetes is skyrocketing, obesity is skyrocketing, and a large part of the strategy to help stress, and certainly in our side, is encouraging physical activity. And there's certainly a lot of evidence about the importance of physical activity and how it can prevent the onset of cardiovascular diseases and diabetes and obesity even things like depression. If you're exercising regularly, it can decrease the incidence of depression and Alzheimer's even, and that's research-based. And there's another strategy at the moment called exercise is medicine. So we're all happy to take a drug to take our pain away or for cholesterol.
Interesting.
Exercise should be your drug because it will translate across all of those diseases, but the dosage is very specific. So you need to find the right time, and there's certain recommendations that are made for the population that you're addressing.
So I've got a question for you, because you've been at World Cups, you have been at Commonwealth Games, you've been to how many Olympic Games?
I've been to 4 Olympic Games.
4 Olympic Games.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're there looking after these athletes. There's no one that is more physically active than them. How do they deal with or cope with stress?
Well, the thing is, it depends. Like, if it's the day before you got a 100-meter event and you've been training for 5 years, the stress levels are out of the sky.
Yeah, sure.
And also, you've then got the coach on your back and you've got the managers on your back. So it depends on what the stress level is. Because often if they've got their managers, and a lot of them are individual athletes, they can then take their time out, they can visualize, they can meditate, they can do whatever works for them. In a team sport, it's a little bit more difficult because you're reliant on so many other people to help you out there. But the stress at any level, even if you're a social athlete and you want to play squash, and you've got an ankle sprain and you're not going to get there the next day and let down your team, you know, then it's also it's a different stress. So whether you're an elite athlete or a social athlete, you've got the same stresses. But obviously the reward at the end is very different.
I do hear you talk about a couple of mechanisms, and those mechanisms are meditation, taking some time off just to
recoup.
Be by yourself. I mean, I it would be so interesting to find out how many of the people here in the audience and are listening actually do that. If they actually do it. Laura and I, you're in the recruitment space. Just share some feelings around what we're talking about here, but what you're seeing in your specific area.
So there are two parts. Firstly, a case study that we've experienced in our own business with our consultants. You know, I looked at our working environment and, our, and the importance of work-life balance, or, you know, whether that exists or not. And we said, well, let's blur that line, okay, to make it easier for our staff. Let's say to them, that they can work. We gave them full rein of flexi time. We said that, you know, they could leave at once they'd completed a certain amount of deliverables. They could leave work for the day. And what happened, what we found, was that people started, and going back to that harmony discussion, people started blurring. Their life wasn't so compartmentalized. So our consultants started working smarter while they're at work, and then taking their work home and going to gym in between, and then working later. And on leave, it wasn't just leave and so no work was done. They were actually doing work on leave, you know, while they were on leave. And it blurred it because we had compartmentalized their life. We found our results went through the roof, and their stress levels lowered, which was because it wasn't so compartmentalized. And I think that's what I see a lot of. I see people who try to be too much of everything at all at the same time. That's when you'll get it wrong, and that's when
Absolutely,
you'll experience burnout.
Yes.
You know, I was chatting to Mark Lamberti the other day, you know, ex-CEO of MassMart, and he was saying to me, I mean, he's an incredibly successful businessman in his own right and family man and juggles a lot of balls. And he said to me, he said, Laura, you've got to be the best version of you in the space that you're in at that moment. So if you're at home and you're with your kids, be a mom. Don't worry about work because you're not there right now. When you're at work, be the best CEO that you can be. When you're speaking to a colleague, be the best colleague you can be. And I think people just try to be too much of everything all at once.
I think, Nadine, for you, I think most of my stress levels personally is that you're trying to be everything to everyone. And you know what, it's just giving yourself and you're completely flushed out and you need kind of to be rejuvenated once again. Do you see that a lot? And and in your travels, is that the same situation?
It's this pursuit for perfection.
Yeah.
And I always, if you have any remembrance of matric algebra or geometry, I don't even remember if it was algebra or geometry. But there's this line called the asymptote, and it's the line that aims for the x-axis but never quite reaches it. And I think we have to look at perfectionism a little bit in that way. Aim for perfection, but understand you're never going to reach it. And just recognize we can't be the perfect, you know, I can't be the perfect director in a day, the perfect mom, the perfect boss, the perfect wife, you know, the perfect goddess in the bedroom, whatever it is. I can't be all of those things in one day because I am tired. And, you know, this comes on to, for me, a really important point that we don't often get to around stress management. When you speak to what's the greatest stress at a world-class athlete level, we can look at it in terms of a world-class corporate athlete as well. What we find the greatest stressor is not enough rest, not enough sleep, because what are we doing? And this, I'm flying my flag boldly around sleep. What do we do? We've got so much to fill into our lives, and we're all time poor and stress rich with all these balls in the air, that we are jeopardizing our hours of sleep and then good quality sleep, which is why I put the dagger to the head, because very often we're sitting on our mobile technology in bed, just trying to catch up on our Twitter account and on our WhatsApp groups, and we're getting all of that backing blue light in our heads, and we're not talking to our partners anymore, and we're not getting into proper rest and recovery. I recently went to bed with a heart rate variability monitor after sitting on my laptop for 2 hours, and it took me, even though I thought I was in sleep, it took me an extra 2 hours to get into any type of REM sleep. Now, your REM sleep is directly responsible for your mental connectors, your emotional stability, your physical rejuvenation the next day.
That's so
true. We're all walking around tired. Now, Dr. Craig Nossel the Springbok doctor of our rugby team about to go and win our World Cup for us, he will tell you all the coaching methodologies now, the focus in terms of what's new in coaching, rest and recovery.
Rest and recovery.
Rest and recovery.
So what do you have to say for yourself? What's the technology?
The key thing
rest
is...
Rest and recovery, love.
Confess, how many hours of sleep did you have last night?
Yeah.
Confess.
This is the wrong day to be asking that.
Okay, I see.
It's probably 5. Which I know is way below your recommended threshold.
Well, no, you see, this is the thing. One actually can't give a recommended threshold. It's anywhere between 4 and 12, but you've got to make, you've got to know for yourself. So you tell me, was it enough?
Yeah, I think it was enough because I managed
to get
the gym.
Isn't it under 12 hours to work?
But I think, look, a personal philosophy again, and I think I actually experienced that in our business. We do have a big advocacy for moderation. I personally say, you know, everything in moderation, especially moderation, but that's my personal take. But the moderation element is important. I mean, look at our business, right? We, global business, 330,000 people around the world. We are proper 24/7 business. Mm. There's this thinking in the business that, you know, don't go and reinvent something. Someone else knows the answer or has done it before.
Okay.
Now, with that thinking, what do? We become lastminute.com. Literally everything we do. I mean, my poor marketing team, you know, they called me yesterday and I said, well, you're probably just returning the favor because I do this to you all the time. Literally, you know, Friday before an event, I'll say, okay, we're a key sponsor. Can you pull it together? Now, yes, that creates pressure on them. But if one is happy in that space and you feel very productive and you are, you know, it's a rewarding job, which I'd like to think many of our consultants experience, then you work it in, right? Because you're working in the pleasure of some kind of result or an outcome that you're driving at a client or in a bigger play. And at the same time, you're learning. So this give and take is the balance and the harmony to some extent that we achieve. The other thing we do advocate is going on a digital diet every now and then.
What are you talking about? just explain, please.
Like, As much as you might decide to give up meat for a weekend or a week or a month or whatever, sometimes it's important. Switch off. Whatever
my
it
stress
is
levels just went through the roof.
So as difficult as it is, I mean, you can see the watch, the phone, the iPad, the laptop, the whatever. I actually do that, and it is hard, Laura. It is pretty hard to do that. But you need to fill that. It actually becomes fidgety. Type of behavior.
Very true.
You know, Apple, when they designed the watch, they designed it around moments. They calculated a moment as 7 seconds.
Okay.
So anything you have to do here should take no more than 7 seconds. But the interesting thing is you have more than 200 of those moments a day, whether it's the watch, the phone, the iPad, whatever, glancing at something. And that should make us pretty scared because if I'm distracted 200 times a day, to pull myself off and look at something or catch up on a mail or answer a message, that is putting something else in control of your attention. And a digital diet is just a way of changing control or taking back control. I spoke at a conference the other day and as a gift they gave me 2 books. I haven't received new books I haven't even bought new books in, I don't know, maybe 3 years.
All right.
Because I'm buying them on a digital device, right? So I am still buying books, but I haven't bought a physical book. It was quite a unique experience. I said, I look forward to a weekend when I'm going to go cover to cover, which is going to mean I'm going to have to do a digital diet that weekend, right?
Yeah. Or even at least, at the very least, and this is where books are so great, at the very least, no exposure to technology half an hour before you go to bed.
Sorry, I missed that.
Maybe. Half an hour before you go to bed. Yeah. If you want to start with a digital diet, just switch off all technology. Half an hour, especially if you're struggling with falling into slow wave sleep, that sleep that's responsible for your physical rejuvenation, and you think your stress is keeping you awake, it may be the exposure to the technology. Mm. So my first tip, switch off half an hour before you go to bed. Don't have your cell phone charging on your bedside table in your room. If you're using it as an alarm clock, a very expensive alarm clock, go and buy yourself a new cheap alarm clock. Put it next to the bed. Have your digital devices charging in another room or in your ensuite if you still want to use the alarm clock, but turn off all technology half an hour before
Very
you go
nice.
To bed. You will not believe the impact.
I was just going to say as well, just going back, you know, talking about whether it's digital, stress-related, whatever it may be. One thing that we have, one commonality amongst candidates that we interview, is that candidates who aren't performing or people who aren't performing in their careers, in their jobs, they're not getting where they want to be, one thing we see is it comes down to their passion. It comes down to authenticity. If you're living an unauthentic life, trying to be a managing director of a company that you're not passionate about, or trying to, you know, see through a career in a line that doesn't make your soul sing, that is going to make it very difficult to manage your stress.
Very good point.
And I can't emphasize how many times I speak to candidates and I say, if I could write you a check right now for 200 million rand and say, have a nice life, what would you do? And they say to me, they say, Laura, I'd start a restaurant, or I'd invest on the stock exchange, or I'd do this, or I'd do that. And I look at them and I go, well, then why are you an IT manager? You know, why are you a CA? If that's not your passion, that's why you keep jumping jobs. That's why you're constantly frustrated. And I think society puts so much pressure on us, or so much adds to that stress, because we are constantly being told what we should be and how we need to behave. But I can assure you, if you live an authentic life, your stress and your management of that stress will be second nature.
Can I just add something about the sleep?
Yeah.
One of the things we find, especially in people who are not sleeping well, is they wake up and they're still tired, but they're also already more irritable. So it takes very little to push your buttons during the day. So it just becomes this vicious cycle. And if you're somebody who's got headaches or pain, your pain gets aggravated, then somebody just says something to you and you just react in a negative way just because you're so irritable. And you have to really step out of that vicious cycle and take a step back and break that cycle somehow. And whether it's eating right, sleeping, and preferably all of them, and exercising, then, and you can step back and get better sleep, then it usually helps with also during your day.
What happens to your IQ when you don't sleep? I've heard some interesting stuff. Are you familiar with any research around that?
Not specifically on the IQ, but in terms of if you don't sleep well enough, your brain is not going to work at the same pace and level, and you're not going to get the same oxygenation. And also, you get tired much more quickly at work. So your productivity during the day, so your whole IQ, depending on when you have a test or when you're having to do a performance-based task, if you're already stressed and you're not focusing, obviously it is going to affect everything that you cognitively.
So I guess it's fair enough to say that guys that are studying shouldn't be studying all night, shouldn't be cramming, right?
Well, I think that's the whole thing. It's taking regular breaks. And there's a lot of evidence coming about prolonged sitting and excess sitting, increasing your risks of diseases later in life.
Interesting.
And even it's now known to be an independent factor. So even if you're exercising, say for an hour a day and doing the recommended dosage of exercise, excess sitting still leads to a sedentary lifestyle. And when you're sitting, everything shuts down, your muscle activity weakens, and it affects your breathing, and then there's long-term consequences. And that's what they're finding now in the literature. A new research just came out in 2015, and they looked at over 800,000 people.
Okay.
And the incidence of diabetes, obesity, heart diseases have all increased rapidly. And because people are sitting excessively, it also comes back to the technology. We're sitting on computers, laptops all day, and people are not moving during the day. So the recommendation is to between every half hour to actually get up and walk around. So 20 to 30 minutes of sitting, and then get up and walk around and undo those effects of that prolonged sitting. But it has to be on a regular basis. And even now, things like standing desks are coming into play. And I was reading some of the literature, and in some of the places, they've even got treadmill desks. So you're sitting on the desk while you're on a treadmill. But they're finding that your typing skills are maybe not so good.
Yeah, look, I can only do one thing at a time, and there's no way I could walk and do anything else.
I
think that's an interesting direction we're taking, you know, because it's we start talking about the future of work.
Yeah.
You know, generally, most of us in corporates, we think about day at the office, very typical environment that you might think of. Innovations around standing while you're working, etc. I guess they're really stop gaps. If we really start thinking about what is the future of work, it goes beyond being this distributed workforce where we have more flexible hours or even flexible work environments, you know, work from home or work from the beach or whatever, you know, works for you.
These are vogue terms, and you're saying it goes beyond that.
It goes beyond that, because if we think about the current structure of a typical corporate, it is defined. You have roles, you have functions inside the business. That starts getting unpacked over time, And it actually gets pushed out of the corporation. You're starting to see more of ecosystems developing that are working towards a common goal. So maybe a good example would be, even in our business, consulting. Today, you could either come and ask us to do some work for you and we'd present a bill, or you could go on a website like Kaggle and put out your job specification. Say, I'm prepared to pay $20,000. And, you know, 10 people might respond with a half-decent proposal. And,
sure.
And suddenly, my job or even my business has been threatened. I don't have this corporate view on things. So how we acquire services and products in the future starts to change. And those people who deliver those services start to change as well. So each of us in our own right could actually form a part of a corporate value chain. So this idea that, you know, into perpetuity or even the next 20 years, that we'll continue being in offices and we'll continue being part of a corporate organization and structure, I think we need to start getting used to the fact that that's going to change dramatically. It is led to a large extent by the capability that technology gives us. To one extent, flexibility. The other extent, maybe more immersion in terms of how much we are engaged. But on the flip side of it, there's the opportunity to, rather than overload ourselves, is to use the technology to augment our functions. Right? So can I use the machine to do the mundane stuff? Or can I use the machine to do the repetitive stuff? Or only throw it to the human when you need a critical decision or something a bit more complex to make a decision about. And I think that also starts removing us away from that eight-hour day. You know, we then can start living in terms of little mini activities as opposed to one long drawn-out period of time in which we're meant to be productive.
I see how you brought it full circle there. Very, very, very nice. 30 minutes, take a break, and if you haven't done it in 30 minutes, come to Accenture.
Exactly.
This was an ad, right?
This was an ad. But I also believe in managing by walking about. Oftentimes, managing by walking about.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the walkabout like the Australians do. It's properly.
Sure.
Getting, as Karen says, get up from your desk. You know, instead of pinging someone or sending them a quick email, you know where they sit. They're like one floor down. Walk over there, take them a coffee, have the chat. It gets you away from your screen, gets you away from the desk. Change of environment. You've actually engaged with a human being.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I find also you will actually solve things quicker, because you're now engaging one-to-one, as opposed to banging forth emails over 2 days. I can solve something in half an hour.
Yeah. Nadine, what do you know that we need to know about our mental health and physical well-being in the workplace?
Well, so from a preventative perspective is the angle that I take. So as a health and wellness consulting business, we used to see the symptoms of physiological and the mental psychosocial issues of stress. And we start to see, as one kind of climbs the corporate ladder, more and more and more stress starts to play a role in terms of these symptoms that we see. And it's quite an interesting, because it's a negative cycle. It's a spiraling negative cycle. So we know that financial issues and health issues cause stress. Those are the two major causes of stress. But we know that it's the stress that is very often causing the health issues. So it's this negative cycle. My view is we have to take responsibility for that for ourselves. We've got to learn to say no. We've got to stop striving for perfectionism. And we have to take control. Integration, as Laura was saying, it's about not setting these defined boundaries and saying there's work, me, there's... Even in your branding, you know, you were talking about integration, kind of having authenticity across the brand. Have authenticity across your life as well. So there is you, and you're in the middle of the circle, and your health is dependent on it, your physiological health, your mental health, and they're serious symptoms attached to this burnout and distress. And we've got to take it seriously. So we've got to prioritize our well-being. You know, it's interesting to me in terms of how we think about this. People come to me and say, can you come and talk to us around time management? Because we need to teach our employees how to manage time better to reduce their stress. Well, the reality of it is there's no such thing as time management. You cannot manage time. There are 24 hours in a day. There are 168 hours in a week. You've got 500 million roles to perform. D deal with it. Set your priorities. We're never going to have the bar one day. You're never going to feel like, hey, lekker, let's chillax and sit back. There's nothing to do today.
Absolutely.
You're never going to feel like that. So take the time to set the priorities around what's important to you. And I find, you know, and this is going to be different for people. I find for me what works in terms of all these balls I have in the air is the day before, set for myself my top three priorities. What are those top three things that I absolutely have to achieve tomorrow because they're important to me? Set them. I get those done between 6 and 7 in the morning. So it could be exercising. It could be a client proposal. It could be a phone call I need to make to my mom because I'm getting lots of pressure because I haven't been in touch for a while. Yeah. Whatever that is, set the priority, deal with it, and then when you have to be more reactive the rest of the day, it won't feel so stressful.
Nice, nice.
Laura, just again, we're a community of future CEOs. You're in the recruitment space. Give us some advice. How should we go about planning our career specifically related to stress? How do we plan? How do we go about doing this?
I think, as I mentioned before, be authentic. If you are happy, if you are passionate, success will follow. And with success, you become a more powerful being, and that will help you manage that stress. And I see far too much of it nowadays where people aren't living an authentic life because they're fearing so many consequences if they make another choice. Trust yourself, trust your journey, trust your capabilities, and you will amaze yourself. You will.
Very, very nice. Karen, give us some pearls of wisdom that we can use in our future CEO journey, please.
Just get up and move. Really, you just need to get up and exercise and stop sitting and get your butts out there and exercise.
Yeah.
And that will decrease your stress. That will make you feel better. You'll engage with more people. Your whole life balance will be better. And you'll just in terms of pain and irritability, it will be better. But the evidence is out there. Just get up and move. Stop sitting for so long. Don't be afraid to get out there and go for a walk at lunchtime. Yeah. Or, and unfortunately, in South Africa, some of the times it's safety issues. Go and walk in the gym. I tell some of my patients to go walk in the shopping center. Then I have to tell the husbands to take the wallets away. And the purses, they tend to get interrupted. But yeah, the priority is get up and move.
Yeah.
Get up
and move. Can I just say, corporate South Africa tells us we don't have time to get up and move. But Stats South Africa tells us that the average South African watches 14 hours of television a week. Okay. 14 out of your 168 hours, not, you know, and we're not talking National Geographic, we're talking Kardashians. So put that time towards getting yourselves healthy and well.
President Obama goes to gym every day, and I think that's
come
where...
Come on now.
If the president...
Yeah. Yeah. Come on now, absolutely.
You know, it's...
Can I just add something about exercise? The recommendation is at least 30 minutes, 5 times a week at a moderate level. And I think that is very attainable. And even for somebody who's unfit, they say you can do it in 10-minute chunks. So start off with a 10-minute episode and then build it up slowly. But these people who say, I'll go to gym once a week, and then they think that's enough, it's actually not enough in the long term for your health benefits. You have to be out there minimum of 5 times a week, but just a 30-minute exercise. And it doesn't have to be a gym. You can be walking. You can be going up and down the stairs. You know, whatever works for you. It has to be sustainable. That's also, you can't tell people to exercise and tell them to go swim if they hate swimming.
Sure.
There's got to be something that they will enjoy to do and that they can do in measurable goals, and it's attainable for them and it's realistic.
I've heard that the absolute best antidepressant is 30 minutes of exercise a day.
Absolutely. So, exercise is medicine, and the research shows it decreases the risk of mental disease, specifically dementia, Alzheimer's, and the evidence is out there for that.
You're not going to have any of these problems because
you're going to be good.
I'm a
final word from you.
I wanted to share some insights around, you know, managing one's career. And how that relates to long-term stress. I actually bumped into an old friend of mine. I haven't seen him for 11 years. And after 25 years in corporate, he's packed it in and he's become an existential coach. I didn't even know what that was. But he explained to me that really, he teaches people to slow down. He teaches people to transition into new roles or even to manage their future careers, etc. And as we were reflecting on this, because you know, we went through those times when we were seriously considering making a change in career, because we hated the company, but maybe it wasn't the organization. Maybe it was we were accepting this stuff for too long.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just going to do the same job in a different business or in a different company with a different brand. It was literally re-engineering yourself. Mm. It was almost hitting this reboot button. And I think that also helps us reset our stress levels or our stress management levels. How many more balls we can add to the to juggle. And if we don't do that, you know, we use the simple example. If you're unhappy as a bank teller at bank A, becoming a bank teller at bank B or C or D isn't necessarily going to change your perception of, am I having job satisfaction? Have I actually progressed from a career perspective? It is important to re-engineer.
I love that.
In terms of what you can handle, right? You know, I think we all want to progress. We all want to do better. We all want to have a greater future for ourselves and our families, etc. But it is important that it's a conscious decision. Stuff mustn't happen to us. I think we need to drive our own destinies.
We're hearing great stuff here
great
today.
Stuff.
We didn't thank them in the beginning, so we have to thank really for allowing us to have this conversation. Accenture, so Seren, thanks.
You're very welcome, Gareth.
Yeah, Accenture, fantastic. Mercedes-Benz, they've got their new, I think, E-Class out the back.
So our
there.
Cars are outside when we leave.
Of course.
Oh, yes. just don't ask me where they parked, okay? So Mercedes-Benz Contemporary is, I mean, absolutely fantastic. That's why this place looks so good.
And of course, home.
Yeah, Cliff Central. Guys, thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, great having you here. And we hope that your Leader X 2015 experience is, I don't want to say better than this, but good. We can't get better than this. Thanks, guys.
No, thank you. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, thank you.